I'm here with Julieta. She's one of the leading researchers here at Cambridge University, trying to understand the impacts of mindfulness on students.
Mindfulness can be defined as different things really at this point. Probably we should get a bit more specific. Mm-hmm. But it's generally speaking at a very high level, a kind of mental training that involves cognitive aspects, but also emotional aspects. And it comes mainly from Eastern traditions where mindfulness is part of the whole spiritual and meditation practice.
I was Googling online, as I usually do, you know, mindfulness youth, mindfulness student, and I saw this in Cambridge University, you know, mindful student. There was a research project going on, so dug in a little bit deeper, and I saw information about the project and the research that you're doing.
Yeah.
Which, I guess, the words that I saw were exam results and students and concentration with mindfulness.
Yeah.
So found the number, called up your office, you called me back, and that's how the conversation began. So what I'd really like to understand is a little bit more, you know, what is the research trying to establish? What are you trying to pull out so that, as you were just mentioning, that it can be rolled out, you know, to demonstrate with more concrete evidence how it can help here with the students here?
Yeah. The main aim really of the study is not to improve their academic grades, but it's to help them develop resilience so that they can face the exam term and the academic pressures in a more healthy way. So that is not necessarily linked to doing better. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As I said, we work with the head of the counseling service very closely. She's one of the members of the research team. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we commented was in the beginning when we were designing the study, we said, well, the main outcome, the main thing we want to measure is actually psychological distress during the exam term. Mm-hmm. But then we have other secondary things we are measuring. We're trying to measure exam grades and things like that, academic performance. Mm-hmm. But we said, we don't really know what's going to happen. Even if mindfulness, we could just confirm that mindfulness lowers psychological distress. Yeah, so mm-hmm. people feel better during the exam term. That might not necessarily lead to better grades. Maybe it's even the opposite, because people have less pressure and people understand that there's more to life than the exams. We need to remember that here, like, there's a lot of academic pressure in general in the UK, according to some studies. But here in particular, people really, really press themselves and they go very far. When they are revising, they spend hours and hours. They are very involved and they really want to get the best grades, not just pass, but the best grades.
Yeah.
They're very competitive. They're very, as we were saying, top of...
Cambridge is known globally to be you know, one of the best universities in the world.
Well, to get here, students have to do very well with their A-levels in the secondary school. So they are kind of the ones that are most interested in academic grades to start with. Mm. So they get really focused, and they are very good at that. But then there's the rest of your life, yeah? Mm-hmm. And that's what struggles. That's what really gets, neglected. So we don't know what's going to happen. We hope that it also helps them to do better. But we might not see that, yeah?
Mm-hmm. So what exactly was the hypothesis then? What was the...
Yeah, it's a very conservative study in a way, because mindfulness has shown in other trials that it helps with stress and mm-hmm. and it improves well-being and helps to avoid depression, relapse, and all these things we know. But science is very conservative. We always want to confirm, yeah. And the more confirmation we have, and the more independent testing with different groups mm-hmm. doing the tests and getting to the same conclusions, that is how we build knowledge in science. It's not just one study showing it. So in this case, we just wanted to know whether students get the same benefits as other populations. Mm-hmm. There has been big trials in other populations with mindfulness, but we don't know much about university students. There are small studies, but a bigger study, with more power, we say, like able to see differences, even if they are not very big, even mm-hmm. able to see effects of mindfulness in different areas and do things like that. For that, you need more people. So a bigger mindfulness study and well-designed randomized controlled trial, which is like a really the least biased way we have to test things in science. So that's how we decided to do this, and that's what drives the main hypothesis, which is that people during the exam term, students who do mindfulness during the exam term, compared to students who are not doing or have not done mindfulness, mm-hmm. Will be less stressed and will have, well, basically less stressed, and then mm-hmm. other things like more well-being, which is not necessarily the opposite of this stress. We really, really don't know much about that yet. But yeah. And other things like the exam grade or whether they have to plead special circumstances in exams mm-hmm. for anxiety. So some people are so anxious they cannot sit in the same room as everyone else and they need a special room. And this has been growing in the last like 10 years or so. More and more people are saying that they are so anxious. They get a letter from their GP saying, like, certifying they're so anxious. Mm-hmm. They cannot sit exams mm-hmm. the same way. They have to interrupt studies. So we are measuring that. But the main one, as we said, is that it will make people feel less distressed during the exam term.
So how many students are involved in this? And how would you go about doing this? Do you get them all in one classroom or do you randomly select? Or how does...
Yeah.
Do
yeah.
they have to go through a specific mindfulness training course first? And they said, yeah. Once you hit this point, then you can take part in our study.
Yeah. We have around 670 students now taking part. And this started in October 2015. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We recruit people just by... Well, with the help of the colleges, where students get like clustered in this university, and we just called made a call. If you are interested in mindfulness training, if you would like to get some mindfulness, an 8-week mindfulness course, sign up, and you will be randomly assigned to one course. Either it will be this term, so it will be now, let's say, mm-hmm. or it will be in a year's time. So okay. you will get a mindfulness course, but it can be now or in a year's time, and that will be decided randomly. Mm-hmm. So that was the proposal. Mm-hmm. So those who were assigned to mindfulness now got into an 8-week mindfulness course taught by this resident mindfulness teacher mm-hmm. who I told you about, Elizabeth English. And she's teaching a version which follows the Frantic World book, but it's adapted to university students. Mm-hmm. So, and it, that's that version, she called it mindfulness skills for students. Okay. So this was offered to students in the community. This wasn't offered to students who were unwell, who were like attending the counseling service or yes. anything. Mm-hmm. So that's a difference. It's not clinical. It's mm-hmm. it's to try to prevent rather than treat. Yeah.
Yes.
And particularly students who were undergoing a very hard like crisis or severe depression or anxiety, mm-hmm. they were told that it's better if they didn't take part in the study because mindfulness could potentially affect them like negatively rather than positively, or mm-hmm. or at least they would probably just leave the course thinking yeah. that mindfulness was not doing anything good to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, so that's how things are working actually. So we trained half of these people, the ones who were randomized to the mindfulness course like immediately. Mm-hmm. And next academic year, that means from October onwards this year. It's a bit confusing.
The second half
will be offered the courses. If people don't attend or if people attend fewer like sessions or it doesn't matter. We are including them in the study anyway, and mm-hmm. we need to measure them anyway because we are trying to see what happens in real life. So, what happens if you offer mindfulness to the university community, to a student's community in this case, independently of how many sessions they attend or how well like they do their homework?
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to improve the general average psychological distress questionnaire in this case, or whatever measure, or not? So you might get that it doesn't, for instance, and that might be because most people are not attending the mindfulness course, like they're not attending the 8 sessions or they're attending very few. It might be because of that, but then you need to think about, you can offer something that is very effective, yeah? So if you do the 8 sessions and follow all and do all the homework, you get an effect. But maybe people are just not interested in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is very important for implementation, yeah?
Yes, so if it's just offered as an 8-week course and whether they attend
yeah.
the full duration or not,
yes.
you still measure...
If you still see a signal, if you still see that they are getting, like, on average, some
on
benefit...
Average, then it will say that it's worthwhile to...
Exactly, yes, it's yes. worthwhile to invest yes. on offering this. That's exactly the type of... Well, you were saying, like, what's the hypothesis? This is very much very important to the hypothesis. So it's not mindfulness training really what we are testing here. It's the offer of the mindfulness
course.
It's a provision of the course
yeah.
to students. That's exactly what we are, the intervention we are testing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
In order to test mindfulness training, you need to make sure that people, you know, attend all the sessions in your training to see whether that is effective by itself.
Yeah.
So how was it advertised then? Were the did the students have to know what mindfulness was, otherwise they wouldn't be bothered, or was it positioned in such a way that do this course and here are some of the potential benefits that you can get, sign up here?
Yes, that is exactly what we did. They didn't have to know what mindfulness
mm-hmm.
was. We would offer some information they had to read all this information before consenting
mm-hmm.
actually. So yeah, and we had a lot of help from colleges, as I say, because students here live in these colleges. We have 31 colleges in the university,
mm-hmm.
and then each college has their authorities and their welfare authorities as well. So what we did, we sent emails to colleges when each term started,
mm-hmm.
and we asked them to forward it to all their students. Mm-hmm. So we got directly into their emails, and we got endorsed by the colleges
wow.
this way.
So that's great access to be able
it
to
great.
Just reach out and say, blast it out to all your students.
Is,
I mean,
yeah, such a privilege. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. That's why I was saying it's so important if you can get authorities and if this effort can be a concerted effort, can be a joint effort, because the whole university is interested really.
Mm.
in the results. So
yes.
this is the best way I can think of doing research, rather than an isolated group of, you know, a little group of researchers trying to overcome lots of hurdles to recruit their participants and then not having any support.
Mm.
There's a big difference between both things, and I think that will reflect in, well, it reflects in the size of the study
mm-hmm.
and in the kind of things we can measure.
Yes. Well, again, when we had Claire Kelly, who's with the .B project, on our podcast, you know, she highlighted to be very careful about saying, yes, mindfulness helps with this, and the exam results, because the science around that is still quite new.
Yeah.
And we're still exploring that. So you did touch upon it a little bit. Is there any kind of, as part of this research, where you get a section of students that don't do mindfulness and sections that do, and see do these grades improve significantly more,
yeah.
or because it's almost very difficult to tell, right? One
yeah.
student versus another, or is it one student that compares themselves to themselves almost,
yeah.
and
yeah.
saying yes,
yeah.
now with this it's helped
yeah.
my. How do you get those kind of results?
Well, that's exactly why we have this group that is not receiving mindfulness until a year later, yeah,
yeah.
because that serves as our control group. Is they are getting their usual support,
mm-hmm.
which there's a lot of welfare services and psychological, like they have a lot of support anyway, but then you have the mindfulness group who they have the normal support plus the mindfulness course. So we can that's when we get to the exam term. Mm-hmm. We have these half, like 300 people, a bit more, not having done mindfulness, and the other 300 people having done mindfulness. And if we can get their exam grades, we can do exactly what you said, compare the group that didn't do mindfulness with the group mm-hmm. that did mindfulness. All other things being equal, that's because we have randomly allocated them to mindfulness or not mindfulness. So we can be a bit more certain that if we see differences, they are because of the mindfulness, which is the only thing that differs between the two groups, mm-hmm. rather than a predisposition or just mm-hmm. a group being more intelligent. Maybe the ones who would choose mindfulness would be more intelligent or not.
Mm-hmm.
But because we are randomly assigning them,
yeah.
And it's a big number. We rely on chance to distribute all the variables, all the characteristics of these groups
mm-hmm.
Equally between groups.
Yeah.
That's the joys of mathematics and statistics. You know it as a math teacher.
And I was interested in when you said there were students who you wouldn't encourage to do it if they were going through like severe depression or can you elaborate on that a little? Maybe have an adverse effect if they would engage in mindfulness at this moment in time if they're going through such.
Well, that's really just based on previous research and on all the development work that has been done with MBSR and MBCT. It's now standard in good mindfulness courses with well-trained mindfulness teachers that they actually recommend these people not to do the course. I mean, even outside the study, what we did is just we tried to not to interfere with the usual way mindfulness is offered mm-hmm. in a good quality course.
Mm-hmm.
So as researchers, we try to stay like really behind. We just try to follow what is normally being done,
mm-hmm.
and this is part of a normal setting.
Okay.
So we would expect that if they took part, they would get more adverse effects. But you also have to measure adverse effects and potentially harmful mm-hmm. situations in mindfulness that could happen even with people who are doing well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. we have some mechanisms to try to measure that and compare mm-hmm. the groups.
But one thing I would add to that is that if you are suffering from depression or severe, issues, not to be deterred by mindfulness, because in fact, it could also have amazingly beneficial qualities. I mean, you have to be wary for those if you do it maybe unguided, and because the impacts are quite powerful, that it could derail you even more. But on the same time, with the right environment and the right mentorship... It could have, if you're suffering severe depression, it could have amazing beneficial qualities as well.
Yes.
So just to throw that out there.
That's true. We need to clarify because this course is designed for people who are feeling more or less well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why in this situation, we excluded these people. But it's not that they, as you said, I mean, there are other courses, the MBCT courses, for instance, mm-hmm. where actually these courses are aimed towards people who have been depressed more than once, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are some tests, like there are some studies going on with schizophrenic patients and, all sort of mental health conditions are now being tested in studies to see whether mindfulness could help. But all these mindfulness interventions have been adapted to that population. Yes.
One of the most important things in my journey with mindfulness and, what I discussed with Anne, is that we have so many thoughts every day, about 60,000-70,000 thoughts every day. And if you just stop and tell someone, you don't realize it because it's just your normal day in life. You're like, bing, I have to go to work, I want a coffee, I want this, and your brain's just doing all that. And the same is you go into an exam room, you open up the exam paper, question one, I don't know this one, I'm going to fail the test, I can't do this, I won't get a job. Oh my God. Instead of taking a breath, realize, accept that, yes, you have all these thoughts, mm-hmm. evolutionary or whatever the reasons may be, but this doesn't help you do question two or question three or question four. What if in that moment because you're practicing every day, your little 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Ah, I've just had a negative thought. I don't know. Take a breath. Okay, well, question two. Let me tackle question two.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even when you're revising, you're sitting down. Oh, there's a party going on next door, and oh, I hate revising. I can never concentrate enough, and I've got a girlfriend now, or I've got my weekend job that I need to do. And what if you could just every time you had one of those of these 60,000-70,000 thoughts, take a breath. Okay, let me get back to concentration. Okay.
Yeah.
It's and really explain to the students that whilst they're doing that, the brain is actually changing. There's different things going on in the brain. And I think when you add all that into the story, I think that helps so much in the explanation of it. And it's proven to help with concentration, proven to help with memory, proven to help with dealing with stress. And so, I mean, like, I like to take the extreme view on mindfulness.
Yeah.
And we often joke about it, how Anne brings me back down with the science and, you know, to be more cautious.
Yeah.
But, you know, because I'm always, yes, it would help exams and it would help better quality of life and all that. So I understand that there's you guys that come in and say, you know, slow down before. Let's test this out. Let's try this out.
Yeah, it's great that we have both, you know, variety is I think is key. Like, people like you are really important because you drive enthusiasm and interest and really open up new avenues also of thoughts, ideas, creativity, lots of things. But then, yeah, science has to come and try to, you know, you try to really thorn the idea like into pieces. You really try to shoot at your ideas, and if they stand all your shots, and they are still there, it's because they're really good. Yeah, that's kind of the thought behind the process in science.
But and if you want to expand it into universities, you know, university wide,
yeah.
Then you do need, you know, that concrete foundation to say, yeah.
Exactly, because you always have, like, people who go, like, they are really pioneers and they start something and it's really great. And then, you know, the big, like, slow science movement comes and really tries to evaluate what's happening and with all these mechanisms. But then once science is kind of convinced, then things can change, like, big time. Because there's a fund, like big funders, big organizations, they look at scientific research to make big changes and put a lot of money in societal things. So there's it's all very slow, and sometimes you really you need a lot of patience, and there's a lot of problems with this translation from science to actually implementing, changing things. But it's, I believe, the best way we have found so far to to do things as a society and trust that those things are good.
Yeah.
I just wanted, if I have time, to comment on what you say about the effects of mindfulness. I think when we say mindfulness, there's a lot of things involved. Like, one thing is a mindfulness exercise, the disposition to be mindful, those are two different things. But then a third thing is when you say mindfulness intervention, we say a lot in research, is basically a mindfulness course. It's like the package. Yeah, we offer you offer a package to people, and they come to a course or when come to training. You don't just say sit down and be aware of the present moment in this way or that way and that's it. Yeah, we actually, in a mindfulness intervention, and I'm not a teacher, but I know what teachers do, and there's lots of things, as you say, they do explain things, they actually draw things, they make people talk about their experiences, reflect, they come back to it. There's a lot of chatting, of observing the thoughts, but then reflecting on those thoughts that were observed. So really, I think it's we call it a complex intervention, because there are lots of things that could be actually having an effect. It's the fact that you're sitting down, and when you're silent and you're doing the exercise, you're observing your thoughts, you're paying attention to your senses. But then a lot of things, I think, with mindfulness practice happen outside the cushion. Yeah, when you're sitting down practicing, then you actually remember your practice and you say, well, I had this sequence of thoughts, and So let's say, why is it so hard for me to concentrate and study? And I think about that and I feel I'm a failure. And maybe it's not, you know, this is the interesting thing. It's not as teachers say a lot, being with the thoughts, being with the bad things as well as the good things. And I would add something more. It's also like acting on those things, because you get to know yourself better, because you're managing your thoughts. It's like you're managing your thoughts better. You have them there. They are there all the time. Mm-hmm. It's part of our human condition.
Yes.
But what do you do with them? Like, I think mindfulness helps just to manage them in a more helpful way. So you might just say, oh, yeah, I'm just having negative thoughts and I'll go on studying, revising. But you might also say, okay, maybe the problem here is I'm not so happy about what I'm doing, what I'm studying. And maybe I'm here in Cambridge doing computer science degree, but mm-hmm. that's because really my dad wanted me to do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's really because of the pressure, but really I would love to be now doing, I would learn how to be a vet and just mm-hmm. treat animals. Mm-hmm. Or maybe not even university. Maybe university is not for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you allow that, and you reflect on what happens to you in a different way, and you are allowing those new thoughts to come up. Mm. They're all also thoughts, yeah. Mm-hmm. We that's the way we reflect with thoughts. But these new thoughts are coming up to the surface, and you're able to see them and to talk to these thoughts calmly. Because of your better management of them, and the thoughts and the emotions that come with them. It's not just thoughts, yeah. But I think that's so key, so important. And they might actually decide to leave university.
Yeah.
Is that bad? Or they decide to change and then to you know leave that degree, but then to apply for to enter to the vet school. Or is that bad? Could we say that is poor academic achievement or negative thing? Personally, I think that's if we could have like passionate professionals and mm-hmm. academics,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
we would be much better as a society. And that I would call that like great success, academic yes. success. Yes, because mm-hmm. you need to like what you're doing if you're going to be really good at it. And
if you're doing something for the sake of, say, pleasing your parents, or it's going to make you money or whatever, but you haven't sort of, yeah. And so perhaps maybe even dropping out of their current course. I mean, yeah. is that necessarily bad if in the grand yeah. scheme of things, it's
exactly.
actually they're finding their authentic self, the real, they've been able to explore that now.
Exactly.
Because of their managing their thoughts and their
exactly.
relationship with...
Because before that, they wouldn't even dare maybe to explore it. This is just one example, yeah? It
yes.
can happen with professional life, personal life, the person you're dating, whatever, the place where you're living, the relationship you have with your parents, whatever, but... The fact that you're now there to see that and say, okay, I'm not going to freak out just because I'm thinking about this possibility. I'm just going to keep it there. Because it's one of my thoughts, right? It's one of the things that appear.
Mm.
I think this is just so powerful. So it's not, for me, it's being in the present moment, but really it's managing your present moment, incorporating your present moment into your life in a way that is really helpful.
Yes.
It's integrating your life, present moment, with your past, with your future. All of them are... like involve thoughts, emotions, but there's a high level to it, I think, and
yes.
it's this meaning in your life, and it's these finding things that really make you click and concentrate. Even if there's a party next door, you are concentrated.
Yeah.
Why?
Mm-hmm.
Is it because you are suppressing negative thoughts? No, it's because you are liking what you're doing. You're flowing.
Mm-hmm.
This is another concept in positive psychology. You're flowing.
State of flow. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we should definitely come back at the end of the year, and you know, I would love to see, you know, what you found or what you haven't found, and have a chat
yeah.
about that, because I know that you're doing one specific research, but all around the world there's other research going
mm-hmm.
on, and it's kind of like there's a wealth of information now
yeah.
where it's all there, you're all supporting each other, you know,
yeah.
whether you find out what you wanted to or not, at least you can contribute. And then you know, just the world library of this information grows.
Yeah.
One question we love to ask our guests is, what really matters in life for you?
Okay. What really matters for me? Oh, that's very personal. I think one of the things we were saying before related to meaning, what matters to you is also related to what means more to you in terms of you have some time in your life. You don't have like, you know... all the time. Like, it's just, you know, it just have how many decades in life? Not many.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do with that time and that and your resources, your energy? I would love to say that if people help each other, that's like really what would matter most. And I believe in that, and it matters for me most. But I know that other people are not necessarily so focused on that. But so I would just say what matters most has to do with your passion, with things that have meaning for you and things you really think your life is worth living for.
Mm-hmm.
That is more generic. It's very personal, and so I couldn't say what matters more in life for everyone. What matters more to me is really, I would like to think that all the work that I'm putting into this research is going to help people in the long term, at least.